Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be looking at transformers.
Oh, cool.
The tech behind all those crazy language models you've been hearing so much about.
Yeah.
You know, the ones writing poems and trying to pass the Turing test.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal today is to understand how they actually work. Like, what are their key components?
Yeah.
And, you know, why they've caused such a stir in AI and in language processing.
Well, one of the coolest things about transformers is they've totally changed how we approach natural language processing.
Oh, yeah.
Like before, transformers models really struggled with understanding context, you know?
It's like that classic joke, why did the chicken cross the road?
Uh-huh.
If you think about it, like traditional word embeddings treat chicken and it the same way, regardless of the sentence.
Right.
So like whether it's the chicken crossed the road because it was hungry or the chicken crossed the road because it was too wide, the model couldn't tell the difference.
Exactly. Transformers are different because they introduce the idea of contextual embeddings, which means they can understand that it refers to the chicken in the first sentence, but the road in the second.
So how do they actually do that?
Right.
I feel like I keep hearing the word attention.
Yeah. Attention is at the heart of how a transformer works.
Okay.
Imagine you're in a library looking for a specific book.
Okay.
So you scan the shelves looking at titles and keywords that relate to your search.
Got it.
That's basically what attention is doing within a transformer.
So the transformer scans the sentence looking for important words, just like I'm looking for the right book.
Exactly. It figures out how much weight to give each word in relation to the others.
Okay.
So we can understand context and relationships, even if words are far apart in the sentence.
Interesting.
And to do this, it uses this idea of query, key, and value for each word.
Query, key, and value. So the query is like my search term in the library.
Exactly.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And then the key is like the book's title, helping me find what I need. What about the value?
Value is the information within the book itself.
I see.
It's what you extract once you found the right book using your query and the key.
Okay.
And the transformer uses these mathematical tools, matrices, denoted as WQ, WK, and WV.
WQ, WK, WV.
Yeah, to figure out the query key and value for each word.
Okay.
And then it scales the result of that using this specific calculation.
Mm-hmm.
But that scaling is just a mathematical trick to help with the learning process.
So it's kind of technical. But I'm starting to get how, by assigning these roles, the transformer can figure out which words are the most important to understanding a sentence.
Yeah, and it actually gets even more complex.
Oh, no.
Because transformers don't just use one attention mechanism.
Oh, really?
They actually use something called multi-head attention.
Multi-head attention. So, like, multiple heads.
Multiple heads.
So it's not just one librarian looking. It's a whole team of librarians.
Yeah, that's a great way to think about it.
And each one has, like, a different specialty.
Yeah, you hit on a key point there because language is complex, right?
Yeah.
So having multiple heads means the transformer can consider different aspects of the relationships between words.
Okay.
Like one head might focus on grammatical links between words,
right,
while another focuses on the actual nuances of meaning.
So it's not just about finding a connection. It's about finding all these subtle connections that make language so rich.
Absolutely. And all of these attention heads work together within these larger units called transformer blocks.
Transformer blocks. So if the attention heads are the librarians, are the transformer blocks, like the whole library.
I guess you could say that each block contains those multi-head attention layers.
Okay.
But it also has these other important components like feed-forward layers.
Feed-forward layers.
Yeah, which kind of further refine the information. And they also have this thing called layer normalization.
What is that?
It's basically a way to make sure all the values are on a similar scale, which helps with training.
Okay.
So these blocks are essentially like little processing units. And transformers can have lots of them stacked together to create these deeper, more powerful networks.
Wow. So deeper networks means more blocks.
Yep. And they also use this clever idea called a residual stream to efficiently move information through the block.
Residual stream. What is that?
It's actually simpler than it sounds.
Okay, good.
Imagine information flowing through the block like a stream.
Mm-hmm.
Each component adds its own insights to the stream. And the residual connection basically makes sure that information from earlier stages doesn't get lost along the way.
I think I get it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like adding notes and highlights to a book as you read.
Yeah.
And building on the original text.
Exactly.
But how does it actually process all this information? I know our source material mentioned that transformers use parallel processing for efficiency.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest advantages of transformers.
Okay.
They can process all the words in a sentence simultaneously using this technique called matrix multiplication.
Matrix multiplication.
Yeah, and this parallel processing is what makes them so efficient at handling these huge amounts of data.
So it's like having a super fast librarian who can read every book in the library at the same time.
Yeah, something like that.
But wait, if the transformer sees all the words at once,
mm-hmm.
wouldn't that be a problem for language modeling?
What do you mean?
Because, like, the goal is to predict the next word.
Right.
And if it sees everything at the same time, it would be like reading the ending of a mystery novel first.
You're right. That is a critical point.
Yeah.
But to avoid that, transformers use this technique called masking during training.
Masking?
Yeah. It's like covering up parts of the sentence so the model can't peek at words that come later.
So the transformer has to focus on the context that comes before the word it's trying to predict.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
But, you know, language isn't just about individual words, right?
Right.
The order of the words is really important for meaning.
For sure, like dog bites man versus man bites dog.
Yeah, exactly. So transformers address this using something called positional embeddings.
Positional embeddings.
Yeah, basically they assign a unique signal to each word based on its position in the sentence.
Got it.
There are a couple different ways to do this, but the main idea is to give the model information about where each word belongs in the sentence.
So it's like a good librarian keeping everything neatly organized and in its rightful place.
Exactly.
I'm starting to realize how intricate these models are.
Yeah.
We've talked about attention and transformer blocks and parallel processing, masking and positional embeddings.
Mm.
All these different mechanisms working together.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. But ultimately, how does the transformer use all of this to predict the next word in a sequence?
Right.
Our source mentioned something called a language modeling head.
Yeah. That's basically the final piece of the puzzle.
Oh, okay.
Think of the language modeling head as the translator.
Okay.
It takes the complex understanding the transformer has built up and converts it into a prediction about what word should come next.
So it's like the librarian, after helping me find the perfect book, also summarizes the key points for me.
Yeah, exactly. The language modeling head looks at the output from the final transformer block,
mm-hmm.
and it uses that to calculate the probability of each word in its vocabulary appearing next in the sequence.
Okay.
Which basically allows the transformer to generate text by predicting the most likely word based on all the information it's processed.
This is mind-blowing.
I know, right?
There are two terms from the source material I didn't quite understand.
What are those?
One is weight tying, and the other is this thing called the logit lens.
Oh, yeah. Weight tying is all about efficiency.
Okay.
It means that the transformer uses the same set of weights.
Like internal settings.
Yeah, you can think of them as internal settings for both turning words into their representations and then back into words again.
Okay.
So it's kind of like using the same dictionary to translate between two languages.
So it's about making the most of the information the model has learned.
Right.
What about the logit lens?
The logit lens is really interesting.
Yeah, it sounds almost magical.
It's basically a way to peek into the transformer's mind.
Oh, wow.
And see what's happening.
So like we can actually see the connections the transformer is making.
Yeah, we can see how it's interpreting text.
Wow.
It's like having a window into the librarian's thought process.
That's awesome. You know, it's interesting that these transformers, the ones focused on predicting the next word, are sometimes called decoder-only models.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
It's because that term decoder-only actually hints at a bigger architecture called an encoder-decoder model.
Ah.
Which is something we can maybe explore another time.
Decoder-only models. Okay.
Yeah.
This deep dive is so insightful. I'm really starting to appreciate how clever these models are.
They really are amazing.
They're clearly powerful tools for understanding and generating language, and I can see why they've made such a big splash in the field.
Definitely. And you know what? We're just getting started.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a whole other class of transformers called bidirectional encoder models.
Bidirectional encoder models.
Yeah. Things like the famous BERT model.
BERT. Oh, I've heard of that one.
We're going to unpack all of that next because those models have some crazy capabilities, like being able to understand text by looking at the full context.
Not just what comes before.
Yeah, not just what comes before a word. Well, the whole context.
Bidirectional models. Looking at the whole context. I'm already hooked. Tell me more.
Okay, so These bidirectional models are really interesting. They're pushing the boundaries of what's possible with language understanding. But before we dive into how they work, I think it's worth talking about how we actually train these massive neural networks.
These huge models, especially in the scale of like a small library. That's got to be a big challenge.
It definitely takes a lot of computational power. And some pretty clever techniques. One of the key steps is something called pre-training.
Is that like giving the transformer a crash course in language?
That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
During pre-training, we expose the model to this massive data set of text and train it on a general language understanding task. Like predicting the next word in a sequence. This allows the transformer to learn a ton about language structure, grammar, and even some general knowledge about the world.
So it's like we're teaching the librarian how to organize the entire library. Before they even start helping patrons find specific books.
That's a great analogy. But once the model is pre-trained, how do we actually use it for a specific task? Like translating languages or answering questions. That's where fine-tuning comes in. So we take the pre-trained model and further train it on a smaller data set specifically designed for the task we want it to do. This helps the model adapt its general knowledge to the nuances of that particular task.
So it's like giving the librarian specialized training on a particular genre of books. Like mysteries or science fiction. To make them an expert in that area.
That's a good way to think about it.
So pre-training and then fine-tuning. I'm still curious about how these language models actually generate text. I know our source mentioned something about sampling methods.
Sampling is basically the process of choosing the next word from the probability distribution generated by the language modeling head.
Remind me what the language modeling head does again.
So remember, the model doesn't just pick one word. It calculates the likelihood of every word in its vocabulary appearing next.
So it creates this kind of ranking of possible words. But how does it decide which one to actually use?
So one approach is called greedy decoding. What's
that?
Basically, we just choose the word with the highest probability. It's really simple and efficient, but it can lead to very predictable text.
So it's like always picking the best seller, even if it's not the most interesting or unique book.
That's a good way to think about it.
Are there other ways to make the text more varied, more creative? We
can use techniques like temperature sampling or beam search to introduce some randomness and exploration into the text generation process. So temperature sampling basically allows us to control how much risk the model takes in choosing less probable words. So a higher temperature means the model is going to be more adventurous and select words that might be a little less expected.
So it's like turning up the heat to make the model more spontaneous. Okay, I like that. What about beam search?
Beam search is a little more complicated. Instead of just considering the single most likely word at each step, it actually explores multiple possible word sequences in parallel, keeping track of the most promising ones.
So it's like having a team of librarians. Each following a different trail of breadcrumbs through the library to find the most interesting path.
Beam search allows the model to consider a much wider range of options, and it often results in more interesting and nuanced text.
So it's like having different strategies for exploring this vast world of language.
That's a good way to put it.
Okay, so we've talked about greedy decoding, temperature sampling, and beam search. They all sound pretty cool.
They're all interesting approaches.
This whole deep dive has been such a journey. We've gone from the basic building blocks of transformers to the intricacies of pre-training and fine-tuning and text generation.
We've covered a lot.
And we've only just scratched the surface. Now let's delve into those bidirectional encoder models. Like BERT. Okay, so you mentioned that these bidirectional models can look at the full context of a word. How is that different from the models we've been talking about so far?
So the models we've talked about up to this point, the decoder-only models, they process text from left to right. They only consider the words that come before the word they're trying to predict. Bidirectional models, on the other hand, can see the entire context surrounding a word. The words that come before and the words that come after.
So it's like the difference between reading a sentence normally from left to right
Yeah.
versus being able to see the whole sentence all at once.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, and I can imagine that having access to that full context could give them a much deeper understanding of the nuances of language.
For sure.
But how do they actually learn to do that?
Good question. They learn through a technique called masked language modeling.
Masked language modeling.
Yeah, imagine you take a sentence and randomly mask out some of the words,
Okay.
and you replace them with a special mask token.
Okay.
The model's job is to predict what those missing words are based on the words around it.
So it's like a game of fill in the blanks,
Exactly.
where the model has to use its knowledge of language and context to figure out what's missing.
That's exactly right.
Right.
And by training on this task, bidirectional models learn to understand the relationships between words in a much deeper way.
That's really clever.
Yeah, it's a really powerful technique.
Okay, so I'm starting to see how powerful these bidirectional models can be,
Yeah.
but how do we actually use them for real-world tasks?
Well, just like with decoder-only models,
Okay.
we can take a pre-trained bidirectional model
Okay.
and fine-tune it on specific tasks,
Right.
like sentiment analysis, question answering, or natural language inference.
So we're leveraging its deep understanding of language
Yeah.
and adapting it to a particular domain or task
Yeah.
by training it on a smaller targeted data set.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
And thanks to their ability to see the full context, bidirectional models have achieved some really impressive results,
Cool.
state-of-the-art results on a wide range of NLP tasks.
That's awesome.
It's really cool stuff.
So it seems like we're really just starting to tap into the potential of these models.
We are.
I know our source also mentioned something called prompt engineering and
Yeah.
instruction tuning. What
Right.
are those about?
These techniques kind of take fine-tuning to the next level.
Cool.
Instead of explicitly training the model on a specific task,
Yeah.
we actually give it a prompt or an instruction that guides its behavior.
So it's like giving the librarian a specific question or a research topic
Yeah.
instead of just asking them to organize books.
Exactly.
And by carefully crafting these prompts and instructions,
Yeah.
we can get some really human-like responses from these models,
Yeah.
even for tasks they haven't been specifically trained on.
It's pretty amazing what they can do.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
It's like we're teaching them to think for themselves and come up with creative solutions.
Yeah. It's a really exciting area of
It
research.
is. Where do we go from here? What's next for the world of Transformers?
Well,
Yeah, it feels like we're really on the edge of something brand new here.
it really is a huge shift.
Yeah, with language understanding and generation and everything, it's
Yeah.
like we're giving these models so much more flexibility with this prompt engineering and instruction
Yeah.
tuning.
Definitely we're moving away from just training for specific tasks and toward more like general purpose language models that
Right.
can adapt to all kinds of different instructions and prompts.
And it's almost like we're changing how we interact with computers completely.
Yeah.
Like instead of having to write code or use all these complicated interfaces, we can just tell these models what we want,
Right.
just using natural language.
And that's really the goal, right?
Yeah.
To make AI more accessible and more intuitive for everyone.
For sure.
And transformers are really key to making that happen.
This deep dive has been amazing.
It has been fun.
We've gone from the fundamentals of transformers
Yeah.
all the way to these cutting-edge techniques,
Yeah.
like bidirectional modeling and prompt engineering and instruction tuning.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. It's incredible how far this field has come.
Yeah, in such a short time, too.
It really is, and it feels like it's only going to get more and more exciting from here.
Oh, absolutely.
Who knows? Maybe someday we'll be having this conversation with a transformer itself.
That's a thought.
This has been such an illuminating look at the world of transformers
Yeah.
and their impact on natural language processing.
For sure.
Thank you so much for guiding us through all this.
It's been my pleasure. I love talking about this stuff.
And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into transformers.
Thanks for listening.
We hope you learned a lot about these really remarkable neural networks
Yeah.
and the incredible potential they have.
They're amazing.
Until next time, keep exploring and keep learning.